It started out as a website, as a blog, focused primarily on giving people very practical advice for how they could use their devices in a way that was more mindful and promoted mindful. Let me give you a simple example. We give a lot of tips for how to reconfigure your smartphone. Do things like turn on Do Not Disturb or schedule Do Not Disturb, turn off other kinds of notifications, use apps that can remind you to be mindful or meditation. There's lots of very simple, practical things that you
can do. That was Robert Plotkin, our guest today on the show, and he's the founder of Technology for Mindfulness, a site that focuses on promoting technology for mindfulness practices. In this episode, we talk about the links between digital technology and mindfulness, the steps that you personally can take to be more mindful with your technology usage, and also the potential for the global digital well-being community to transform the quality of our lives. But before we begin, welcome to episode 110 of the Digital Mindfulness Podcast, where we bring you the best teachers and thought leaders from around the world to discuss how time well spent digitized experiences can help improve human society and the world at large. If you're new to our show, then the best place to find out much more about what we're doing here is to visit digitalmindfulness.net, where you can find a collection of some required listening shows and other resources where everything is discussed, from digital wellness to persuasive technologies, addictive technologies, behavior design, and much, much more. So now, enjoy this show with Robert Plotkin. Hi, Robert. Thanks so much for being on Digital Mindfulness here today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation and learning more about what you're doing. So thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much, Lars. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's really great. I'm very excited to speak to you because I think we can connect on a lot of things.
Thanks, Robert. That's great. So why don't you just introduce yourself to the audience and tell them a little bit about your journey to working within this area of mindfulness and technology and how it's evolved over the years?
Yeah. So I did launch Technology for Mindfulness a few years ago. It is a website, a podcast, a blog. It's an organization that is dedicated to helping people be more mindful, focused, productive, and therefore creative and happy in their lives while using technology. We very much value technology while being aware of all of its risks, the ways in which it can cause anxiety and distraction and disconnect people from each other. But we believe that technology can be used in ways that promotes human connection, that promotes focus and presence and productivity. And so we really, my passion and my mission is to help people get the best of both worlds, that being of mindfulness, focus, presence, and technology, and to have those two merge together harmoniously. Because I think very often in our lives, those two things seem like they're at odds or fighting with each other. I certainly experience that. And if you talk about my journey, it very much links into my own journey, which is I have a few different backgrounds which all interweave. Part of that is in software development, computer science. I started programming at around 10 or 11 years old using a TRS-80 in fifth grade back in the early 80s.
That's old school.
You know, I really fell in love with computers from the first time I was shown how to program them. You know, I think these days a lot of people are introduced to computers through social media or video games or other kinds of software. I was introduced to computers as a programmer, and I really loved it. But at the same time, I also, as a young person, was a writer. I loved writing, creative writing. And I used computers to write code and to write short stories and essays as I got older, longer creative works. And I really loved how sitting down at a computer could help me stay focused. You know, people talk about that state of flow that people experience while doing lots of different, but playing music, lots of people in their professions. I've heard surgeons talk about being in a state of flow. Certainly if you play any kind of sport, that state where you feel fully immersed and integrated and wholly present, bringing your whole self to whatever you're doing. And I felt that way with computers. And then the internet came along. And then high-speed internet. And then smaller mobile devices and devices that were always connected to the internet, computers that could multitask. And this happened gradually. And I gradually found that I, instead of turning to a computer and finding myself being more focused, I was being more and more distracted. That when I wanted to do focused creative work or in my professional life, which is as a patent lawyer, I had to start turning away from computers. I found myself fighting with them to stay focused. And this was really fresh. I felt like I was losing a partner that I loved working with, you know? And what motivated me was the knowledge from my actual experience that computers and smartphones didn't have to work this way. They could work a different way because they had in the past. There's actually a way in which I felt that so-called progress or improvements in technology was moving us backwards. was taking away a lot of the positive elements that earlier technologies had. And so part of what I'm motivated to do, and I said before, getting the best of both worlds, is to actually try to recapture some of those older elements of technology from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and see how we can incorporate it into modern technology, keeping all the benefits of today's technology, high-speed internet, video, live video and audio, fast searching, access lots of information, but to apply that in a way that is focused on what's best for us as human beings, to help us be the best we can and to make the best use of the technology, with the focus being on what our needs, wants, goals are. My goal really is to try to merge the past and the present to create a new present with technology.
So, Robert, in addition to being a technology aficionado and using this technology to help you be more present and more attentive, I'm also assuming that mindfulness is also a daily part of your life.
Yeah, so there's a couple of other threads, which is, you know, my primary exposure to mindfulness has been through studying martial arts, which coincidentally, I started it around the same time as I started using computers. I was 10 or 11 years old, studied Japanese martial arts, initially Shotokan karate and jiu-jitsu, Japanese jiu-jitsu. These days I have to say that because Brazilian jiu-jitsu is very popular now. But, you know, I studied martial arts. I've been studying it ever since. A few different martial arts. I've had the good fortune to study under teachers who incorporate mindfulness into the teaching. It's not always taught that way. Interestingly, although I remember hearing the word mindfulness a long time ago, my martial arts teachers would never use that term. But, you know, in Japanese martial arts, there are other types of states of mind, like what we call zanshin, mushin, which are mindful states of mind that we work towards developing in martial arts practice. But, you know, once I started hearing about mindfulness meditation and hearing about how popular it was and then started practicing that myself, I felt like there was a lot of it that was already familiar to me from martial arts practice, but also quite a bit that was different. And so it's been really great for me in the last 4 or 5 years to be studying, practicing meditation, both for how it reinforces the martial arts training and complements it too by adding lots of different layers. So yes, it's not a fad for me. It's something I've been involved with. It's been a really deep and integral part of my life for 35 years in one way or the other. And it really does influence how I think about and interact with technology. I'll just say this briefly, which it might surprise people, which is that, you know, in martial arts, you learn how to interact with another person who is coming to you aggressively. And you learn both physical techniques, but mental techniques of adapting your attitude and your mental posture towards that attacker. And, you know, I often feel like my smartphone is attacking me. it's aggressively or assertively trying to grab my attention or pull me in a certain direction to do something that the designer wanted me to do, read an ad, buy a product, or do something else. And I found that that kind of mental and physical training for responding to someone who's coming at you influence you to act according to their will. You know, when someone throws a punch at you, you could see it that way. Those same internal techniques can be applied to a smartphone. Even though it doesn't have a mind of its own, the internal techniques we can use to respond to it, I think, very much overlap with martial arts training.
So given now then that you've seen this monumental change from working with early computers to now to the point where we're multitasking as much as the devices that we're using every day, was technology for mindfulness, was that a project that you started in response to this, to feeling, as you said, assailed by your smartphone?
Yeah, so it started out as a website, as a blog, focused primarily on giving people very practical advice for how they could use their devices in a way that was more mindful and promoted mindfulness. Let me give you a simple example. We give a lot of tips for how to reconfigure your smartphone. Do things like turn on Do Not Disturb or schedule Do Not Disturb, turn off other kinds of notifications, use apps that can remind you to be mindful or meditation. There's lots of very simple, practical things that you can do that can help either eliminate distractions, help you stay focused, remember to be present, make wiser decisions. And I just think a lot of people just don't know about any of these options. They don't involve necessarily learning how to meditate or developing any new kinds of spiritual practices like that. So that's a big part of it. And that's in a large way how we started out. And I called it technology for mindfulness for a reason. And, you know, and I said earlier, I want to see the development of technology steered in a way that promotes human goals. So I call this technology for mindfulness. I want to see technology as something that serves people. I think very often we find ourselves struggling against feeling like we're doing the bidding of the technology. and there's another martial arts analogy here, which is, you know, in Japanese martial arts is this concept of sen, somewhat complicated, but I'll use an analogy to tennis. This is a kind of crude analogy, but you know, if you play tennis, someone serves. The server is trying to put the other player off balance. And if you see someone do that really expertly, they can have the other player running back and forth. They're only reacting, right? They're responding. They're almost acting at the will of the server. That server, we'd say, Marshall, has really taken sen. And in many interactions, human interactions, whether they're a physical fight or not, there can be this kind of struggle, explicit or implicit, maybe somewhat subtle, for kind of control over the flow of the interaction. That's one way of thinking about sen, is you learn to be aware of what your own intention is, and then mentally and physically to assert it in connection with another person. And then when they respond, perhaps for the same reason, to assert their own will, part of the training is learning how not to be sucked in or directed by the other person's will. Right? So in a simplistic way, you could think of sen as taking initiative or taking control of the flow. At higher levels, it becomes more of an acting harmoniously with the other person. And really at the highest level, there'd be a disappearance of even seeing the other person as an opponent anymore. Yeah. You know, the two of you would merge into one. But with the smartphone, whenever I get that feeling that the phone is acting on me as if it feels like it's trying to make me do something, there are things we can do to learn how to pause and continue to act according to what our own intention is, regardless of what the phone is doing. And we teach a lot of that through Technology for Mindfulness. We have been releasing some guided meditations that are focused on use of technology, doing that through Insight Timer and through the website itself. And we're about to launch an online course, which consists of guided meditations. And the unique aspect of them is you do them with your smartphone in your hand. Uh-huh. So you're guided through the internal experience you have while you're interacting with your smartphone and apply meditation techniques to that to learn how to be more grounded and responsive rather than reactive.
So, Robert, you spoke briefly about the importance of presence and particularly attention when we're working with our devices every single day. But I wonder if you can just talk a little bit more about the interrelationship between mindfulness and technology from your perspective and the work that you've done with your audience, because I'm really interested to know, and of course we talk about this every single week on the show, but I think it's really helpful to just re-emphasize just what is the impact on people every single day when they're using technology in a way that's not intentional.
Yeah. Look, and first thing I want to acknowledge is it is really, really hard, I think, to stay focused on what our own intention is. Let's say at the smallest level. I'm focused very much on the workplace, but this could apply to you at home. You sit down and you're going to write a memo. That's your intention. But certainly a person could knock on your door, right? A bird could fly out your window. But today, a lot of the challenge is when the technology does something. You hear a text message notification arrive, or something else happens on technology that attracts your attention. And I want to just, I'm acknowledging how hard it is, because I know I can often feel, and I hear from many people, people feel some guilt or shame at their inability or difficulty at resisting those distractions, those external distractions. And I'm acknowledging how hard it is to normalize it. You know, I'm sure you know, and people who listen to your show know how many billions of dollars and I don't know how many tens of thousands of person hours have gone into designing the technology to be optimal at grabbing our attention, at taking our attention away from what we originally decided we wanted it to be focused on. You could almost say the internet economy has thrived on being so successful at taking people's attention away and towards where it needs to go to earn money. And I'm not saying earning money is bad. Let me just be clear about that too. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that to some extent, at there being advertisements. I think just that the way it's that attention economy, as it's been called, has developed, become very lopsided, and it's very powerful at grabbing our attention. So I would hope none of us would feel inadequate or guilty. I know that when I speak to people and I mention some of these things, often the reaction I get is nervous laughter or guilty admissions. Some people saying, oh, Robert, you know, yeah, I tried to do something the other day and I got distracted every 30 seconds, or I can't sit down for more than 5 minutes and read a book anymore. I mean, I really got launched into doing this. Big motivation was about 10 years ago when I read The Shallows by Nicholas Carr. You know, he starts out with some personal anecdotes about saying, look, I'm a writer, he says, for profession. My job is to be really focused for hours at a time, reading and writing. I think he was in his 40s at the time. And he said, look, I've noticed I don't have the same brain I used to have. I have a different brain. It's been rewired by heavy use of the internet. I have a hard time reading a magazine article from start to finish. I speak to colleagues of mine who are university professors who tell me the same thing, you know, that they have prided themselves on being focused, having that skill of intense focus and being able to engage in deep, extended thought for purposes of creating new ideas, having new, deep insights. and none of us can do it anymore, or we're finding it really challenging, even when we're reading a book on paper, even when we're not online. And this shows that our brains have literally been rewired. And then he talks about all of the scientific research backing this up. And that was a really big wake-up call for me. But it also, I felt, you know, on an emotional level, is normalizing. It says, hey, you know, there's nothing wrong with me if I'm experiencing this problem. It's a normal thing. Everyone's going through it. It's understandable. And we're all in the same boat. And that's a long way of getting around to saying why I started by saying I want to acknowledge how hard it is. I personally found being able to acknowledge that for myself helps me be present, more present with it. You know, I think that if you feel a lot of guilt or shame about this, it might lead you to hide it from people, you know, pretend as if it's not having an impact with you. You might be afraid to share your experience about this with other people. I'm very out about it. You know, this impacts me all the time. I struggle with it. People often say, Robert, you know, how, they assume that I must have mastered all of this and I'm the most focused, you know, person they know. But I struggle with this. I struggle with it all the time. You know, I've made improvements in myself. I follow my own guidance. I do the techniques that I teach. And yet I struggle with it. You know, it's really hard. I'm not sure if that answered your question, but, you know, that's a big part of what we address on Technology for Mindfulness.
So the work that you're doing with Technology for Mindfulness is really empowering people to make better choices when they're using their devices or certain tools or whatever. But I'm really interested to know your opinion on the moves by the larger technology companies into this digital well-being space by providing more data on particularly device or service usage. What's your opinion on that? Because again, this really, I guess, provides more competition to what you're doing. Do you think this really helps people more?
Yeah, and I think they interact with each other. First of all, I praise Apple and Google for taking these steps. I've called for it. Lots of other people have called for this for a long time, and now they're actually acting on it. So I say we give them a big round of applause. And one reason I say that is I've heard a lot of skepticism from people in the mindfulness world about these efforts. Are they a kind of, you know, in the environmental world, you talk about greenwashing, companies that are put forward environmentally friendly efforts, but it's really some sort of subterfuge, you know? And, you know, it could be that with Apple and Google, but I'd say why not praise them for the positive aspects of what they're actually doing? And let's ask ourselves, if they're doing what we've called on them to do, and then what we do is come out and criticize them, just criticize them out of pure skepticism, are we even helping ourselves? I mean, they're on a path that on its face looks like it is incorporating features like extensions to Do Not Disturb, giving people more. Part of what both of them are doing is incorporating the ability for you to track your own usage of your smartphone so that at the end of the day or the week, you could look on your phone and say, oh, you know, I used my phone as a phone for 3 hours. I used text messaging for 5 hours a day or what. You know, that's all really useful information that a lot of people in the mindfulness world have called for. So let's praise them. You know, I would say trust but verify. We want to have a holistic approach to it. Don't wholeheartedly and uncritically accept what they're doing, but don't have a knee-jerk critical reaction and just reject it as somehow being just purely out of corporate self-interest. Either. Let's pay attention to where they go with this over time and see, you know, I think it's apply mindfulness to it. Pay attention to how these well-being initiatives actually get incorporated into their products. And if there's any ways in which they undermine mindfulness, let's notice that and call the companies out on it. And let's also continue to raise our voices and give them feedback about how we'd like them to make further changes. The fact is that the Apples and Googles and Microsofts of the world, because they control the operating systems, they have an incredible amount of power to change how much and the ways in which our devices command our attention and either work with us or against us. There's things that you can do at the operating system level that would be hard or impossible for an app developer to do. So I think it's really important that we stay aligned with these big companies and latch on to what they're doing and try to be supportive of them in continuing to head in this direction. I just noticed recently, Google owns YouTube, and I think it's a pretty new feature. You can go into the settings in YouTube and tell it, remind me to take a pause if I've been in the YouTube app for more than a certain amount of time. You know, that's one of my personal poisons is watching too many videos in a row. And I've set that setting. It says, Robert, you've been watching for more than 30 minutes. Would you like to take a break? I say, bravo, Google. they didn't have to do that. And they've done it. And you could say it hurts their own business model, right? If they're getting ads from getting revenue from putting ads on YouTube, that's something that's pro-user and anti-ad revenue. So let's praise them for that.
So one thing you spoke about, Robert, was this thing called the internet economy, which is analogous to the attention economy. And I wonder whether you think that technology itself really can ever be distraction-free.
Yeah, I think it could be. I think that what we'll need is not just technological changes, but some changes in business models. And I think this is really exciting. You mentioned the internet economy and the attention economy have largely been driven in their profits by business models which generate revenue from grabbing people's attention, right? Originally, at just advertisements, right? At the beginning of the internet, banner ads was the primary way, then on the side, and now they've become way, way more sophisticated. But in-app purchases, in video games, and all these kinds of things. I think there are what's really exciting, if you are an entrepreneur, an innovator of any kind, is to be thinking about what are alternative sources of business models that don't rely on having to grab and divert people's attention in order to generate revenue. So we can look at the kinds of companies that have been putting out products that make money in other ways. For example, safety. They're long before Apple introduced Do Not Disturb While Driving, there are lots of third-party companies that recognized, not just for safety, that it would be valuable to prevent people from, on a technological level, from texting while driving, but that it was actually could drive profits. So companies were selling these kinds of apps and more integrated systems to UPS and FedEx because it hurt their bottom lines when their drivers were in accidents. I mean, it may sound inhuman to just be looking at the motivation for stopping accidents as something that would improve profits. But that's one example. Worker productivity in the corporate world. there's been so much research showing how much a distraction in the workplace cuts into corporate profits. When you think that an information worker, so to speak, who needs to be focused for long periods of time to be productive and therefore to generate revenue and profit for the company, can be distracted every 5 minutes or 10 minutes and take 5 minutes to regain their focus. A company has a really strong business reason from their own profit motive to keep their workers focused by adopting technology, configuring technology to not distract their workers. These are just a couple of examples of alternative bases for business models that can be very profitable that don't rely on grabbing your attention to generate money. I'm sure there are many, many more. And that's where I'd like to see people putting their attention to new business model generation.
I think you're right, Robert, that we as a society, I think it's more important that we actually look more for solutions to the issues that we're constantly bumping up against, rather than constantly finding fault with the status quo. But I'm wondering, out of all of the plethora of solutions that you'd have on your website, what's the one thing that you would share with the audience to use technology more mindfully?
Yeah, the one really, really simple one. I'll give the general version and a specific one. Turn off your notifications as a default. Turn off notifications. You may even try as an experiment. You know, go on your iPhone, go into settings, go to notifications, and then you'll see all your apps listed there. You could try as an experiment for one day, just turning all of them off. I know it sounds crazy, and I'm not suggesting you do that as a long-term solution, but do that as a starting point. Let that be your default. And then go back through each one and only turn on the ones that you really, really need to have on. And that's a good mindfulness practice. Pause on each app and say, you know, do I need this game? I don't know, maybe to notify me when someone else has posted a high score. It takes a moment to pause and really answer that question, you know, yeah, in the way, in a wise way. And if you do it mindlessly, you're likely, you may be more likely to just turn on a bunch of notifications that you think you might need that you really don't need. So I would say that's the simplest one. And then more specifically would be, and this is available in all operating systems, in Apple it's called Do Not Disturb. Just whenever you want to be focused, you're going to sit down and read or eat with a friend or a family member or just have some quiet time. A lot of people don't know the simplest way you can do that on your iPhone. I'm doing it right now. Turn it on, swipe up from the bottom of the screen. You'll see an icon that has a moon. Tap on it, the background will turn white, and Do Not Disturb is on. You don't have to hunt through lots of settings, tap many different buttons, and turn on right from there. It's called the control center. And then all your notifications will be silenced until you go back in there and turn it back on. One tap, it's very, very simple. And it will silence your phone and stop it from distracting you.
You know, Robert, one of the things that you brought up, and this actually was going to be my next question, was this whole idea of technology anxiety. And I really would like you to expand on that, as where do you think are the most prominent, where do you think are the most common sources of technology anxiety today? One of the things that I keep hearing about are notifications, because on the one hand, from a developer perspective or a business perspective, notifications really increase engagement. They really increase the stickiness of an app or of a website, etc. But also, what you are also finding is that from a user perspective, they can also be very distracting. They can, especially when we're not directly looking at our phone at the time, they can also be very disruptive to our attention and cause, as we're talking about, this technology anxiety. So in addition to notifications, where would you say that this technology anxiety lies most commonly today?
You know, at the biggest level, I hesitate to say this is the single source, but if it's not the single, it's one of the biggest, which is what people call FOMO, fear of missing out. You know, if you get a notification about anything, a new piece of news, an email, and you feel drawn to it, what is drawing you to it? And what is preventing you or causing resistance in you about not looking at it? It may very well be the fear of missing out on whatever you will see when you respond to that notification. And this is a good mindfulness practice. It's something we promote through Technology for Mindfulness, is to actually engage in that exercise when you get a notification. Pause and ask yourself, what am I feeling right now? It may be fear. It may surprise you that there's fear. Because, you know, fear often underlies other emotions. There might be a surface feeling of excitement something that feels more positive. Oh, what's there? What will I see? What text message will be waiting for me? But underlying it, and what may be what stops you from not looking at the text, is fear, actually. And it can take some time to pause and really connect with yourself before you can see beneath the excitement to the fear. Now, I can't, of course, if you're a meditator, you know, I can't tell you what you're going to feel when you pause. I'm just saying this is a very common experience. And I think this fear of missing out is behind a lot of the anxiety. I think it is what makes the notification so successful often at drawing us in. And it's what makes so many of the technologies out there successful. Social media, you know, this has been well documented in studies, but many individual people will tell you the same thing from their own personal experience. They keep going back to Facebook or Instagram from a fear of not being there. What will they miss out on if they're not there? What will other people think of them if they're absent from it for an hour or a half a day or a day? It's fear-based. And it's designed in that way to leverage the fear of missing out. And again, I don't fault anyone for this. This is a really deep-seated human emotion. And so there's two ways to try to address it. One is to change how the technology works. The other is for us all individually to, well, I'm going to say three, actually. Two is for us to focus on ourselves individually, practice mindfulness, and develop other habits. But there's a third thing we haven't spoken about, which is how can we work together? It's, you know, individual mindfulness practice is really important. But there's a strong social component to all of this. There's social pressure, which we might feel individually, and maybe it's unjustified. That's, we may be afraid that someone else will have a low opinion of us if we don't respond to a message for a while. But you know what? That might have some justification. Someone else might have a bad opinion of us. They might have developed an expectation. Look, I'm a lawyer. I remember when I started in 96, we had email. But even with email, clients didn't expect you to respond immediately. That's all changed now. You know, the social expectations within that lawyer-client relationship have changed. It's not something that an individual person can change on their own. There's a really good book called Sleeping with Your Smartphone by Leslie Perlow. She's a consultant. She's a management consultant. And this is based on her work with really high-powered management consultants, you know, people who work 80, 100 hours a week in teams. And she said one of the most effective practices she put into place to help these people relieve their anxiety was if you had a team of five consultants, they're basically working around the clock, was for them all to agree, okay, let's sit down, Bob's night off. You know, Bob's on the team. No one on the team is going to message him after 6 o'clock on Wednesdays until 9 the next morning. And we won't fault Bob for not checking his messages or doing any work during that time. And Alice's night is Thursday and Jim's night is Monday. You know, it's a group, collective, collaborative decision and agreement among a team. It's not just individual decisions. You know, if one person on that team decided, hey, everybody, I'm not responding on Wednesday, that might actually hurt their status within the team and hurt their job prospects. It might not just be a fear, it may be a fact that it would hurt them. It's only by the team agreeing to this with each other. And people talked about the fact it didn't just give them a night when they could relax, a night work and sleep well and all the benefits that come along with that. It helped them feel more bonded, connected with, and supported by the other people they were working with. So I think this is partially, for me, the next level of the evolution of where we're going with technology and mindfulness is to be thinking about and working on social changes. And social could mean as small as two people. I mean, beyond the individual level. It can be you and your husband or wife. It can be you and a friend. It could be a team of five at work. It could be friends eating dinner together. you know, or it could be an entire organization. It could be at a city or a country. You know, I think that's the next level to go to, because there are really significant limits to what any individual person can do on their own.
Absolutely. And we were also speaking previously about some of the tools that are available to increase that awareness of how people are using their technology. But tell us a little bit more about this course that you're creating.
You know, the course I'm creating is mostly individual. At its basic level, it's a series of guided mindfulness meditation exercises that you can do with your smartphone in hand. So there's pre-recorded audio that steps you through how to pick up your smartphone and do something like what I mentioned before. Look at a notification, pay attention to yourself, and do many of the kinds of internal practices you would do while engaging in traditional sitting meditation. Pay attention to your feelings, what your thoughts are, but now while you're looking at or otherwise interacting with your phone. It's a kind of applied mindfulness practice. That's the course. There are a couple of exercises at the end which bring in a partner, which ask you to bring in a friend to do things like call you, text you on your phone, and then the audio guidance steps you through some suggestions for how to really retrain your mind. You know, for anyone who's involved in mindfulness practice has heard of the difference between being reactive or between reacting and responding. I've heard lots of different definitions, but you could think of reacting as a kind of automatic response, automatic or unthinking response. If your phone beeps up, pops up a notification and you just automatically go and respond to it and read that text message and respond, that would be reacting. Responding would be, even if briefly, you pause and make a conscious choice about what to do, which may be, I'll respond to that in 10 minutes. I won't respond to it at all. Even if you choose to respond right now, if it's a conscious choice that you've made freely and not just automatically out of habit, I'd say that's a way of responding rather than reacting. And so a goal of this course is to help people retrain their own minds to respond to their phones rather than just react to it. Rewire new pathways, really.
That's great. So, Robert, where can people find out more about you, your website, and connect with you?
Yeah, the hub is technologyformindfulness.com. You can find everything there. You know, the podcast is available in all the usual places, iTunes and SoundCloud and elsewhere. The Tap Into Mindfulness course, go to technologyformindfulness.com. You can sign up to be notified when it will be available, which will be soon. We're putting just the final finishing touches on it. But everything is available through Technology for Mindfulness, including getting in touch with me.
That's great. One final question I do have is, I wonder if you can share the different apps and tools that you personally use on your journey to become more mindful with technology.
So you mentioned reminders. You know, I use a few different things. One thing I do for reminders is fairly low tech as it goes, which is just set manual alarms on my phone. You know, I set alarms to do things. I use a few apps for, I personally find sound to be something that helps me to stay focused, to stay calm, to go to sleep better. I find it useful for many different things. So I've used Calm, C-A-L-M, originally calm.com, now the app. Also Insight Timer is great. One that's not as well known is Focus at Will. It's not one of the big ones, but it has various kinds of music which have been developed to help people stay more focused. And what I find, what originally drew me to it, was that they are designed for different people of different, call it energy levels and personality types. Some people find, you know, heavy metal music to be really calming and help them focus, you know. I find water sounds. This is part of mindfulness practice, right? It's all very individual and it involves paying attention to what works best for you. Not true that one size fits all. And that's what I like about something like Focus at Will. that gives you the opportunity to test it out and find something that works best for you. I'm not currently using any of the Pomodoro timers that are out there. For people who aren't familiar with the Pomodoro technique, it basically is a technique where to be more productive and focused, you work for a certain amount of time, let's say 25 minutes, and then take a break for 5 minutes, and then work for 25 minutes and take a break for 5 minutes. So there's plenty of apps, websites out there where you can set what your work length is, what your break length is, and it will beep at you and tell you when to start and stop working. And for those people out there who, like me, have more of a natural tendency to feel that if I just keep working nonstop, I'll be more productive. You know, the science shows these days that it's not true. I mean, maybe there's some super people out there, but for most normal humans, you actually increase your productivity, and there's other health benefits to taking breaks and not just working straight through. And there's a lot of technology out there for doing that. I also use Insight Timer and Calm.com for listening to guided meditations, which are really great. And the variety out there is really incredible. You know, for anyone who hasn't listened to them, there is, I would say, I would encourage people to know that there's much more than what you would think of as just traditional guided meditation. There's meditations on apps from all different kinds of traditions, different strands of Buddhism, but Christianity and Judaism and secular meditations. And then there's just music. There are inspiring talks, which aren't guided meditations. It's just really incredible. I would encourage anyone who hasn't tried out things like Insight Timer, Calm.com, Buddhify, you know, to check all of these apps out and see what works for them.
Thanks so much, Robert. This was incredibly helpful and informative. And here's wishing you all the best with your course and with the website.
Thanks so much. I really, really enjoyed being here.